Okay. So, you may have seen the email, and you may have noticed I posted the solutions to old homework 8 through 10, and I just returned to you. And so next, now that we've turned in 13 through 15,
next thing up, we'll have to write some solutions for 13 through 15. Did anybody have any questions regarding the old homework or the one you just turned in? Yes. Remember what day it was?
Yeah, it was homework 14, I think.
Okay.
I think it was number 48.
Number 48. I guess I won't need the screen now. So the question wants to minimize it or maximize it?
How far from A will the concentration of particulate matter be between the areas at a minimum?
Okay, so. No, I think I understand. Okay, so we have A and B. Okay, now the distance between A and B is 10. Now you imagine going some other distance, x, right? And if you're at this point, then this is the concentration of the pollutants. The idea is, as I understand it, the pollution is 8 times as bad from A as it is from B, right? And then with this inverse square law here.
They get that.
Okay, so generally speaking, I would want to be closer to B than to A, right? Because things are 8 times as bad at A. But you can't go all the way to B because you see this division by 10 minus x squared. So if you take x all the way to 10, you're going to get division by 0. So this function is not even defined if you're exactly at A or at B. It goes to infinity. And so if you graph the thing, it's going to look something like this. Right, the one that something over x squared is going to send you off to infinity, right, if you go up this way. And you're also going to get sent off to infinity if you go to 10, because the 10 minus 10 is 0, and you have division by 0 there. So the question is, where is the... You have this minimum. Where is the minimum? And as I understand that they don't give a number for k. Right. I think we are allowed to assume, though, that k is a positive constant. Okay. Well, if you wanted to know the value of the minimum, you would have to know what k is. But since it's a constant, we can still take derivatives, and
basically the k factors out.
Negative exponents. So we have to take the derivative of this thing. That doesn't look quite as bad now. Okay. Power rule. Subtract 1 from the power, so it becomes a negative 3. We got here. 10 minus x. Oh, we're going to have to use the chain rule here. So we're going to use the same power rule, but we have to multiply by the derivative of the inner function, the 10 minus x. Well, this part is just going to be negative 1. So it all comes together. So there's some stuff that can be factored out. There's a k. Actually, there's also a 2. So let's factor out the 2 and the k. And then what do we have left? We'll have negative 8 x to the negative 3. And then negative 1, so plus 10x, or 10 minus x to the negative 3. Okay, how could this be 0? The K is some positive constant. That's not going to be zero. This thing has to be zero. So the only way we can make it zero is if this term cancels that term. So we're going to have 8, oops, x to the minus 3 is equal to 10 minus x quantity to the negative 3 power.
Okay. Is that intimidating, perhaps?
But at this point, it's just some algebra. Now, maybe you put that into your calculator, and you got the answer numerically. The book usually tries to make the problems easy and let the numbers come out nice and round. So you can actually do this one without a calculator, believe it or not. But at this point, I could just put this in my calculator. Right, now that there's no mysterious K floating around, I can ask my calculator to solve that equation for me.
Say if we want to do it old school. Okay. So let's write it out with some fractions and it'll give us a hint as to what we should do. Okay.
Well, I could get my variables as numerators.
So flip everything over. Take reciprocals of both sides more precisely.
And I got some cubes there. Well, the only way two numbers can have the same cube is if they're actually the same number. I'm just going to take the cube root of both sides. The cube root of 8 is 2. Remember, the cube of a negative number is a negative number. It's not like when you square things and you lose a minus sign. So there's no plus or minus or anything when you take a cube root. It's just one solution. Okay. Not so bad anymore. Okay, so we have x over 2 is equal to 10 minus x. Fractions are an easy way to mess things up. Let's just multiply by 2 and make all the fractions go away. So 2 halves of x is just x, and then on the other side, 20 minus 2x. A little more room. Yeah. 3x is 20. X is 20/3 of a mile. Okay. So about, what is it? That's exactly 6 2/3. So it turns out you want to be exactly 2/3 of the way from A to B. Well, that's how it's done.
The calculus part is not trivial. I had to use a power rule and a chain rule here.
But then it was just a matter of factoring and not getting worried about an unknown constant. Just thinking algebraically. And once you get down to this equation here, then again, you can either do the algebra, or have your calculator get the solution.
So that's how I would have tackled that problem. Questions about this one or other ones?
the new stuff for today I find very interesting. That one. This one. I'm going to look at differential equations. There's a whole course. It's at the 3000 level, the math and engineering majors take it, called differential equations. We're not doing anything that big. We're just doing some easy differential equations. And I'm going to focus on financial differential equations. Okay. Start out with something very basic. You probably remember this formula for continuously compounded interest. Where does it come from? It comes from a differential equation. And differential, okay, there's the differentials, dA, dt, right? The ratio here is the derivative. And what does that read as? Right? Well, see, A is supposed to be an account balance, right? So the account balance A is growing at a relative rate of R. If you have $1,000 in the account and the interest rate is 5%, then your account balance is growing at a relative rate of 5%, but the absolute rate would be 5% of the current value, right? 5% of $1,000 is $50. Talked about these on day 8, and so that was a while ago. Actually, I guess you could say day 9 as well. So that homework set you just got back had some stuff all about this. So it's your rate of change as a multiple of your current value. So your account balance is growing at, say, 5% of the current value. Okay. And, okay, well, what does this thing have to do with exponentials? Well, technically, I need one more thing. Which is that when t is 0, the account balance is given by this number p, right? Just knowing the growth rate doesn't tell you everything. You have to know what you started at, right? The 5% interest account that starts at $100 will have a different balance 10 years later than the 5% account that starts with $10,000. Okay. Let's put these two things together. So it's not clear how to get from here to exponentials. It's a bit of a windy road. We have to go through logarithms. Right? So the trick is, I do something a little funny here. I'm going to put all the A stuff on one side of the equation and all the time stuff on the other side. So I'm going to multiply both sides by dt, say, and divide both sides by A. Okay. See what I did there? Multiply both sides by dt, divide both sides by A. So this is called separating the variables. There's two variables, the account balance and the time. The rate R is supposed to be a constant. Things get more complicated if you have a variable rate. You can do the math, sometimes with a calculator's help, but it gets a lot more complicated. I'm not sure I want to inflict that complexity on you. The book doesn't. Spare you that. So, in the constant case, we're going to get the usual formula. Okay. It still doesn't look anything like an exponential. Now what we do is we take integrals. So I'm going to integrate both sides. Okay. Now, this integral, does anybody remember how to do this one? What's the integral of, or antiderivative of 1 over x? Well, natural log of x has derivative of equal to the reciprocal function. So the reciprocal of a has antiderivative natural log of a. And here, you can think of the r as just a constant. So think of, now we have here r times dt. So you're thinking of a function of time. So a function of time with slope r. How about r times t, right? The derivative of r times t, where r is a constant, will just be r. Problem. It's a little subtle here because here you're thinking about derivatives with respect to a. Here you're thinking about derivatives with respect to t. The differential tells you which variable you're supposed to be thinking about derivatives of. Here you're thinking about derivatives with respect to a. Here you're thinking about derivatives with respect to t. Oh, but what about the constants? Oh, those annoying constants, right? Well, we'd have a constant on the left side, a constant on the right side, but that's not very nice. The two constants are in some sense wasteful. Right? I could always move a constant over, right? So how about I just have one constant C? Right? There. A little nicer. Generally, when you have integrals on both sides of an equation and there's constants of integration, you can always simplify it and just have one constant. It's because you can always subtract one from the other like I did here. Okay, so the log of the account balance at time t is equal to this linear function of time. Okay. Now you may be able to guess where the exponentials come in, because how do we solve for a? We have to undo the logarithm. So the inverse of the logarithm is the exponential. All right. So a is e to the rt plus c. Well, where's the principle? Where's the p? Well, you can see it arise in a minute. It's e to the rt times e to the c. Okay. And when t equals 0, a is supposed to be p, but a is also supposed to be given by this formula for all time, so e to the r times 0 times e to the c. Well, 0, r times 0, but e to the 0 is just 1. So that e to the c is just going to be the value at time 0, the principle, as it's called. Okay, so the e to the c there is just the principle, the starting account balance. So a really is going to be the principal times e to the rt. So the formula for continuously compounded interest is no longer some dark magic. It's just a consequence of constant relative growth. If your account balance is growing at a rate of 5% of the current value at all times, and it's growing continuously, then you have to get this exponential formula. It's forced on you just by our little differential equation here. And this is really just naming the value at time 0. That's just some notation of it. This is the interesting part. Constant relative rate of growth is exponential change. So that's where this stuff comes in. These differential equations is at the basic level you get stuff like this, and we can make it slightly more sophisticated in a minute. We can ask more complicated questions like, what if instead of just putting $1,000 in the bank account and leaving it there, what if every month I put in a little bit more? Right? Then what would happen? We can make it a little more interesting. Questions or comments about this little thing here? I should take some pictures. Modify it a little bit. Let's say that we're putting money in there, not just at the beginning, but we're actually adding money. And the simplest way to model that in terms of calculus is to assume it's happening continuously. So instead of trying to do a discrete analysis of every month I put in $300 or whatever, we just model it as continuous, so that the account is constantly having this stream of money added to it at a rate of, say, $300 a month. Maybe we're saving up to buy a house, or saving up for college, or saving for our kids' college, or for retiring, whatever. Let's see here. Okay. Retirement. Okay, so let's start with nothing, right? You get your job, and the account starts empty, but you're going to slowly fill it over
40 years of work or whatever, right? Let's see, $300 per month, so that's going to work out to be, if we do everything in years, it'll be $3,600 per year. Just multiply by 12. Okay. Say that the money in the account, to keep it simple, we'll assume the rate of return is constant. Of course, in reality, if you put your retirement in stocks or something, which is probably good for the long term, the rate of return varies. There are good years, bad years. But in start of a simple model where we just say, okay, probably the average rate of return is going to be such and such. Look at all the retirement calculators on the internet. That's all they do. They don't get super sophisticated. They just say, okay, imagine your rate of return is 3%, 4%, 5%, whatever. Here's what we predict will happen. So the money in the account earns more money, right? It earns income. It could be through interest, maybe you got some money in bonds, it could be in dividends, it could be just in appreciation, you buy a stock low and later you sell it high. But however the investments earn money, maybe you invest it in real estate and you get money in rent, whatever. It earns some income. At a relative rate of, let's say, 5%. Okay, so now this is enough for us to start modeling. So we could ask, what will the balance be? If we keep putting in $300 per month and the money that's in there is earning 5% interest or whatever as additional income beyond the $300 we're putting in there, what's going to happen in 40 years? Is this going to be a lot of money or not very much to live off of? Okay, so A is equal to 0. That's the part about starting empty. And then what's the rate of change of A? So it's a little different than before. It's not just going to be a rate of change equal to R times current value. There will be that. You'll get the 5%. But you'll also be putting in the $3,600 per year, right? So you have $3,600 per year plus 5% of whatever the current value is, right? If you have $10,000 saved up, then that is going to be earning you interest or dividends at a rate of 5% of $10,000 per year. So that would be $500 a year. So at first, most of the growth is coming from you just depositing your $300 a month. But the more money you get in the account, the more the growth is going to come from just the money already in there earning interest or dividends. So if the account balance got to, say, 20 times 3,600, right?
So if by the time the account balance gets to 72,000,
then at that point, the 5% interest will be the same as the 3,600. So once you get to 72,000, this part will be the bigger contributor to growth.
Okay. Anyways, we have all that.
Okay, but that's just conceptual. That's not quantitative. We want a number. What's going to be in there after 40 years?
Okay. We have to separate the variables like before. Okay. So not as obvious how to do it. So the right thing to do is to just take this whole thing here, since it doesn't involve time at all, take this whole thing and divide both sides by this whole thing and multiply both sides by dt. So the whole right-hand side, we just cancel it out by dividing by it. So we get this. And on the other side, we just get dt. Multiply both sides by dt as well.
This will work. Because whenever you have something to integrate, it's always dA times or divided by something, and then the other side is dt times or divided by something. We want something of this form.
That's how integrals always look. They're always something times a differential.
And this something should only depend on A. This something should only depend on T. So that's the separation of variables part. All the A stuff is over here. All the T stuff times is over there. So one integral is very easy, right?
And one integral is not as easy. Right? So you can think of the dt as 1 times dt if you want. Right? What function has slope 1? Let me think y equals x, right? It's time, so it's really t, and plus a constant, as usual. Okay. So one side is easy, but this side, I'm going to do some work here. So to get the interesting integral done, there is going to be a logarithm, but first we need to make a u substitution, like we talked about on Thursday.
Okay. So if you take the derivative of this thing with respect to A, you get this. So in terms of differentials, du is 0.05 dA. Now, what we have up there, though, is a dA itself. I'm going to replace all the A's and dA's with U's and DU's. So I actually need to solve this for dA. So I can divide both sides by 0.05. And because I picked a nice round number like 5, you can write this as just 20 times du. So up here, we get 20 du over u. Great. Well, that's just going to be the log of u. Well, factor out the 20. So 20 times the log. And I'm leaving off the plus c because I've got another plus c over here on the other side of my ultimate equation. Mm, 20 log of u.
you. We don't want you. We want stuff in terms of the account balance. So we need to go back and use our original variables.
Okay, so 20 times the log of 3600 plus 0.05a, right, because that's what we define u to be, is going to be t plus c. And we can figure out what C is right now. Okay. So this is the general solution. So I haven't really used the first part about us starting with nothing, but that's what I'll use next to figure out what C is. So I'm going to use 1 to figure out what the little constant c is. So when t is equal to 0, 0 plus c will be the left side, and the right side will be the value for a equals 0. So 20 times the log of 3600 plus 0. So now we know what the constant C is. It's 20 times the log of 3600. Fine. But we still don't have the answer to the original question, what will the balance be in 40 years? Yes, we still have to do a bit of algebra. We have to actually solve for A at some point. Okay. Solve for A now. So I know what C is. If t plus 20 times the log of 3600 equals 20 times the log of 3600 plus 0.005A. So there I just used a 7 and 8, right? After I did all the calculus stuff, right, I separated the variables, I computed some antiderivatives. Right? At this point now it's just algebra. So we have t plus the constant, which we know now, given our initial condition of starting with an empty account, is equal to 20 times the log of something depending on the account balance. So we've got to solve. Okay, so it's kind of like unpeeling an onion. You just, okay, so the outermost layer is a multiplication by 20. So we're going to divide by 20. Then we've got to unpeel the logarithm. So we're going to take an exponential. Then there's a 3600 added on. Okay, so unpeel that. Subtract the 3600.
then there's a 0.05 being multiplied by A. We got to unpeel that. So how do you get rid of that? You divide by 0.05, or multiply by 20, same thing.
Okay. So divide by 20. Take exponentials. Subtract the 3600. Divide by 0.05, which amounts to multiplying by 20, because I picked a number that has a nice reciprocal. Several steps, but none of the steps were particularly tricky. You just had to undo whatever the outermost operation was. I just had to do four things there. And this looks a little ugly. We can simplify it a little bit. Use a rule for powers, right? You can break up a power of a sum into a product of powers. The exponential cancels the logarithm. So it's this. And so then you can actually factor out a 3600. Nice and simple. All the simplification isn't strictly necessary. If all you care about is the balance in 40 years, then you can plug in, you can plug in t equals 40 right here if you want to, and so you'll have 40s throughout, right? If you don't like carrying around all the variables. I kept the variable t in there because now with the simplification, if I'm curious and I want to plug in a different number, like what if t is 30 or 50, I can try it and it's easier. Okay, so here's 72,000 times e squared minus 1. Could ask my calculator what that is. I know E is less than 3. E is around 2.7, and 27 squared is 729, so I'm guessing E squared is around 7-ish. So subtract 1 is going to be around 6-ish. So I'm probably going to get something over 400,000, probably less than 500,000. Let's see. Okay. 460,000. Want it to the nearest cent, it's $460,000 and 12 cents, or sorry,
$460,012.04, if you round to the nearest cent. Obviously, trying to predict something over 40 years is pretty arrogant, so don't be too precise. About 460,000. So that's what $300 a month and a reasonable guess about the rate of return could get you after 40 years of savings. Let's see. Let's make a little comparison. What if we hadn't put the money into investments? What if we just kept it as cash? What did that 5% do for us? It more than tripled our money. That's what it did for us. But it took a long time for 5% to triple our money. 40 years. But it, it made it. Of course, with inflation, keeping your money in cash is, even worse than it sounds, because a dollar today is not as valuable as a dollar. A dollar today is more valuable than a dollar in 10 years. So. But, there. So, this is something maybe you could actually imagine using some calculus for in your life now. Do-it-yourself retirement planning here. Questions or comments about this? So, 40 years of work, and we saved up almost $500,000 just for $300 a month. Now, we are going to retire. So now we're going to start taking money out of the account. But how much can we take out? And for how long, right? You get your Social Security check, but maybe it's not enough. You wanna fly more often. You know, see your grandkids that live two states away. Those expenses add up. Who knows how crazy expensive healthcare will be, et cetera, et cetera. So, all right. So now, to our next problem. Starting with $460,000,
in a 5% earning account. So we'll assume that we're still earning our 5%. It's not entirely realistic because usually as you get closer to retirement and then when you actually retire, you usually want to shift your investments to lower risk stuff. So usually your rate of return is not quite as high. So let's say we've made it a little more conservative and say it's earning 3%. The reason you do that is because things that earn higher returns on average have higher variance. So you take money out in a bad year on the stock market and you lose a lot because you have to sell stuff at a low price. So most retirement schemes actually do something a little more complicated than aiming for 5% every year. They aim for higher returns on average at the beginning, but then they shift to lower returns later in exchange for lowering your risk. That's the usual strategy. So probably you're going to be more in bonds, less in stocks, something like that. So you're not going to be earning as much. And let's say we withdraw $1,000 a month. This is not all we have to live off of because hopefully we have something else like Social Security or some kids to help us out. Okay, so that's $12,000 a year. Let's think about this for a moment. Basically, I want to know, when will the money run out? Or will the money run out? Well, what's 3% of 460? Right? It's 13... $13,800. Okay. So if you only take out $1,000 a month, things are pretty good. Basically, 3% times this is okay. So if you don't take out very much, you won't have a problem. Because what's going to happen? You're going to be you're withdrawing $12,000 every year, but every year you're earning at least this much. At first, you're only earning at this rate. Yeah. But since the account is going to be growing here at a slow rate of $1,800 a year, the next year, right, you'll have $1,800 more in the account. Actually, a little more because it's all continuous, and so it'll get even better, right? So the account will keep growing. In fact, it'll grow exponentially, very slowly, but it'll actually keep growing. It starts out growing, and then as the 4600 gets to be bigger and bigger, then this side of the equation will look even better. The 3% of your current value will become even higher and higher. So that's great. But what if we take out more money? If our account is earning 3%, but we start withdrawing more than 3% of the principal per year, then then the account will eventually run out of money. In this scenario, the account never runs out of money, and I guess when you die, you leave the money to your family or you give it to charity, whatever. Let's say we need more. Right? We need more to live comfortably in our retirement. All right, so we've got Social Security, but we need more. So we withdraw, let's say, $2,500 per month now. So that's going to be more. That's going to be $30,000 per year. So now when does the money run out? So now we'll actually do a little bit of calculus here. Right. See, at the start, it's going to be earning $13,800 in interest, or dividends, whatever. But you're taking out $30,000, right? So the account is going to be shrinking, not growing now, because $30,000 is bigger than $13,800. And as the account balance shrinks, well, 3% of a smaller balance will be less than the 3% of $46,000. So then the account will be earning less, but you're still withdrawing the same $30,000 a year, so it'll shrink even faster. So let's see if we can figure this out. So let's put some equations on here. So A is equal to $460,000. When t is equal to 0, and a is equal to 0 when t is equal to what? That's what we want to know. When does the balance hit 0? And we have, in words, we have a differential equation, right? It's a 3% earning account, so that's 0.03 times the current value. Growth, right? So it's growing at an absolute rate of 3% of current value. But we're also taking out $30,000 a year. So it looks like this. Okay. Well, let's see what we can do. Let's give some names to these things. Let me call this R. Let me call this, just make up a letter here, S. Okay? That way I don't have to write the numbers over and over again. Just use some symbols, okay? How about W? W for withdrawal. That sounds like it. Easier to remember. Okay. The letter's not important. I just don't want to have to write 30,000 over and over and over again. Okay. So now I separate the variables like I did before. Okay. Now, in this scenario, remember that this thing is going to be negative, right? Where the account is draining, right? Because we're only earning $13,800 in interest at first, but we're taking out 30,000. So when we do this integral here, we have to be a little careful. So remember that if x is negative, then the antiderivative of 1 over x is actually the log of negative x. Okay. Now, one way that people deal with this annoyance here, I guess I should put some plus c's in there, but is if they don't want to think about which case it is until later, they can kind of delay the problem by just writing everything in terms of an absolute value. Right. So that automatically handles both cases, right? Because by definition, the absolute value of x is what happens when you throw away any minus signs. So if you have a negative number, take the negative of that to undo the minus part. So in this scenario, this is relevant. We have to. Substitution like we did with the earlier problem. The derivative again is just going to be the rate, in this case 3% instead of 5%. Du over r is dA. This is the thing that I was talking about here, that this rate, this is the dadt, the thing that's less than zero. This is the negative thing. So it's going to be 1 over r times the log of the negative of u. I could enumerate the steps again. 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7. Now bring in the fact that the other side of the differential equation, after we separate it, integrates easily to t plus c.
And solve this for you, and then we'll look at A here. So, well, hold on. Let's get rid of the C first. Okay. Okay, let me just get rid of the U. It's going to be too much confusing here. Okay, so we have 1 over the R, and remember that's the 3% times the log of the withdrawal rate, the 30,000, minus now the 3% R there times equals 0 plus the constant C that we're finding now. Now this is where you would run into trouble if you had not taken care to use the log of negative U here. If you just use log of U, you would get into trouble here because you'd have these switched around and you'd get the log of a negative number, which is undefined. And so you'd get into trouble right there. But thanks to this minus sign, this is going to come out positive. Remember, this is the 13,800. This is 16,200. Okay. We can figure out what C is now. 0.03 times the log of 1 over 0.03. Okay, so about 323. Okay. Now, when A equals 0, when the account runs empty, what time is it, right? How many years later? Okay. So we're going to have 1 over the rate, the 3% times the logarithm of the withdrawal rate, 30,000 per year, minus R times 0. Where's my logarithm? Equals the unknown time plus the constant C, which we now know. Okay. Oh, well, this is not so bad then. We just found C. Okay, so we're going to have the log of 30,000 which is about
343.63. Right? And then C is about 323. So the answer is about 20 years. So if you have your 460,000 and it keeps earning at least say 3% return, then you can take out 2,500 a month for 20 years, and then you're out of money. Sorry, I'm running a few minutes over time. I really wanted to finish this problem. Okay, so homework 17. I'll just give you one problem so we can get out of here. Let's say, given a credit card balance $2,000. The account grows, right? The credit card company charges you interest, right? Make the minimum payments, right? Maybe you only pay $50 a month, right? That works out to $600 a year? So that's 30% of it paid off a year, but they're charging you 12% interest, right? You'll pay it off, but it'll take longer than if you, you'll have to pay more than just the 2,000, right? There's all that interest, right? So this is basically the retirement money running out problem. Right? It's a balance earning interest, but money is being subtracted from the balance. It's from the credit card company's point of view, it's their balance earning interest, but then money comes out of the balance every time you make a payment to them.